When she was growing up in Iran, best-selling author Azar Nafisi first discovered American literature through books like Mark Twain's The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn and Babbitt by Sinclair Lewis. These books riveted her childhood imagination and shaped her early impressions of the United States.
When she later moved to the United States, Nafisi was surprised to find a disconnect between the vision of America she found in its literature and the country she encountered upon arrival. She wondered why the country's politics seemed at odds with the values of its art, music, and literature, and how a country with such cultural wealth could harbor so many lonely people.
In her new book, The Republic of Imagination, she makes the case for solving some of America's biggest problems, including education, rising school violence, and the crisis in the humanities by looking at it through the lens of literature.
Azar Nafisi is with us now. She is the author of Reading Lolita in Tehran, which sold over 1.5 million copies and was translated into 32 languages. She's also a fellow at Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies. Her new book is called Republic of Imagination, America in Three Books. Azar, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
In part, this book came about because you were haunted by a young Iranian man who came to your book signing. You call him Ramin, and what he said to you then. Can you tell us that story?
It was during one of my book signings at Elliott Bay Bookstore in Seattle, Washington, and I see this young man looking very somber. And when his turn came, he didn't have a book. He told me that he had just recently come to the United States, and then in a very sort of heartbreaking language, actually, tone, he told me that you're wasting your time. These people don't care about books and things like that. They're not like us, Xeroxing hundreds of pages of Madame Bovary or Mark Twain. And that sort of set me thinking that what Ramin said, how true that was, and can a democracy survive without a democratic imagination?
Now, ever since that day, as you said, you've been thinking about what he said, and you've been building the case that the imagination matters to democracy and the imaginative works of fiction that you read and you grew up on. Why do you think that even in democratic societies, we need to care deeply about the spaces that imaginative worlds of fiction open up?
Well, I think that, certain things are universal. They're like bread and water. Just being human, we need it. And I think the telling of the story, imagining life as it could be or as it should be, and empathy, imagining ourselves in places of others, and being curious and wanting to find out about other people through imagination is in our human makeup. But, with America specifically, when I was a very young kid, I got to know America like all the other countries through this imaginary map. And I remember that when I read The Wizard of Oz, and I thought that, oh my God, in the middle of this desert, there is this fertile land of Oz where Dorothy goes and comes back with, a new experience. And then I was watching American films, which seemed very strange to me at the time when you're talking to someone and then in the middle of your talk, you start singing and dancing. So America, for me, was a land of imagination. And when I read its history, the fact that the founding fathers had created this country partly because the country needs bridges and engineers and people getting good jobs and living, and also, just as important, on spiritual and intellectual nourishment and their focus on being carrying on the legacy on enlightenment. Humanities was very important in the creation of this country, and humanities are still important in the development and preservation of this country.
And yet you list bookstore after bookstore that is closed in America in recent years. You talk about arts programs that are cut, arts teachers that are lost, school curriculum, you say, that steers children away from asking questions and using imagination. What do you think is happening?
Well, that was what set me, more and more made me think that I want to write this book, because especially in the system of education and with our public schools, where because of funding or whatever, nowadays poetry and art and music are considered not as essential to children's education, but as luxuries that many public schools can no more afford. And I thought that what is happening is that there is a trend, which I talk about in the second chapter when I'm talking about Sinclair Lewis's Babbitt, which is very utilitarian and short-sighted, and also looks at the world just through the eyes of material success and money and more money. And I think that is a trend that you see at least our elite. And that is a trend that is becoming very dominant in our education, where rather than providing the means for realize their talents, their natural inclinations, their passion, we are just using schools as career-ready institutions. And that is not how a democracy acts or survives.
Now, you look at American society and culture and the state of its democracy through this lens of fiction. And one of the three books that you focus on, the first of them is Huckleberry Finn. And you read this during the rise of the Islamic Republic in Iran. How has its the characters and the conflicts there informed your view of the world?
I properly read it. I had heard the story from my father, but I read it in college, and then I taught. It was the first book I taught at the Islamic Republic of Iran. At that time, me and my students, living under the conditions that we were living, we were sort of focusing on this whole idea of the repressive kind of society that, in fact, Huck and Jim lived in, and the heroism of both of them was the fact that they rejected at the risk of losing their lives, among other things, the sort of conformity and the sort of image that the conformist society, the Sunday school society, wanted to impose on them. And I was telling my students that Huck, for me, represents an independent mind, and when I came to the United States, I realized that as opposed to the kind of individualism right now that constantly preaches selfishness and each one of us for our own, we need to have Huck Finn's kind of individualism, which means independence of thought, but is always growing and it's always creating a moral ground for itself through connecting to others and through giving to others, because of the relationship between Huck and Jim, which is essentially a give-and-take relationship. And Huck learns through his relationship with Jim how to become a better person, a more moral person.
And do you think that kind of individualism is what the forefathers would have hoped for from its citizenry?
I do think so. You know, when you have, and I talk about it in my book, in Huck chapter, especially because I was talking and discussing it constantly with a friend of mine who is also Persian. You know, we were talking about the fact that this is a very poetic country, in essence. When you have the Declaration of Independence that talks about pursuit of happiness, and it wants life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness for every individual as their right, that country cannot live in ignorance. That country cannot live without imaginative knowledge. That country cannot segregate the passion for science from the passion for humanities. And that is what Jefferson was talking about. He said that we need to build bridges. We need to have houses. But side by side with that, we need to have knowledge. And they were well-versed in Cicero and Tacitus, the Roman and Greek philosophers and thinkers. And Washington, father of this country, talks about the fact that the happiness of a society relies on teaching literature, on education based on literature and science. So how could we say that we are carrying on their legacy without carrying on the spirit of that legacy?
Azar, what do you think that we lose when we stop putting a premium on the world of imagination and the things that it produces, the poetry and the fiction and the music?
I think that, you know, there is a quotation I used actually in reading Lolita from Saul Bellow when he was talking about the fact that a country who loses its passion for poetry and for its soul is a country that faces death. No country, and especially this country, wants its children and the world to know about it only through its military and political might. What represents America is its history, both the good and the bad, but its resilience and the fact that it has constantly looked at itself critically and has tried to change. We see this best in the civil rights movement and the women's rights movement and the minorities' rights movement. These all come out of our imagination, our restlessness, our desire to change, and the desire for change and for innovation would not exist without the ability to imagine and without the space to put your imagination to work. You know, our young people today are using Apple all the time, and they should read Walter Isaacson's biography of Steve Jobs and Einstein and find out that how these two men believed in the power of imagination even more than science.
Azar, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
That was Azar Nafisi, best-selling author of Reading Lolita in Tehran. Her new book is called The Republic of Imagination, America in Three Books.